It's April 20th, 1987. I'm going to do an oral history on James C. Ramsey. He's a pioneer of Rock Springs and Sweetwater County. First, I will talk to his son, James Ramsey. Then I will talk to his granddaughter, Diana Ramsey Gaddy.
So, James C. Ramsey. James C. Ramsey is deceased. He died on January 23rd, 1980. When was Jim born?
He was born February the 10th, 1894. Oh, I'm sorry.
Where was his parents from?
One was from, they were from both from Scotland. One was supposed to be, his mother was and Antony was supposed to, when the Romans invaded over there, then they were supposed to be an offspring of them. And that's how supposedly related Mark Antony.
What was Jim's full name?
James Campbell Gullen Ramsey. He was named after three preachers. And that's how come he didn't like preachers, I think.
Were they Catholic?
I don't really know. I kind of think they were, because Ireland and England, it was probably a Catholic deal, I think.
Where did his parents live?
In the old country?
No, here.
Oh, here? Well, they lived in Rock Springs for a while. And then they traded a grocery store in a city block for a ranch 40 miles south of Rock Springs.
I understand that Jim didn't see town for quite a while.
No, I guess he was out there, I imagine from about the time he was 2 years old, it was about 7 years that he didn't come into Rock Springs at all.
Did they go through by horse and buggy?
Horse and buggy, wagons, mostly.
Was there any close neighbors at that time?
Well, yeah, there were. Oh, one neighbor was Tommy Edwards. That was about a mile down the creek, which we ended up owning the place afterwards. That place was sold to McGass. And then my dad and an uncle of mine, Bob Ramsey, bought the place from the gas. But at that time, the closest place, it was about a mile down the creek. But there was other neighbors a couple of miles on down further, but that was about it.
Is the old homestead still standing?
Oh, yes. We're still using it, and we grow hay on it. Use it for our cattle in the winter time and the fall.
I understand his future wife, Jim's mother, was midwife to his future wife's mother. Can you tell me the story about that?
Well, I don't really know too much about that for sure. It's just the hearsay or whatever, but I'm not too sure about that.
Okay, how old was Jim when his future wife was born?
Well, let's see. He must have been about 14, I guess.
Did he go to school?
Until the 8th grade, and that was it.
Did they have a school out there?
Well, yeah. They had a school out there, and then he went to school about 2 years in Superior, too.
Was he, like, boarded out at that time?
Yeah, he was boarded out at that time because his older sister was living in Superior, and he stayed there for 2 years with him.
Do you remember how many brothers and sisters he had?
12 altogether. There was 13 in the family. He was the youngest.
And how big was the house they lived in?
Well, it was 4 rooms. Yeah, it was 4-room house.
Do you ever remember him talking about any kind of dances or anything like that when he was young?
Oh, yes. Well, he had a real good memory, and sometimes I kind of wondered if it was that good or not, but some of the stuff he used to say was, it had to be his own thinking, I thought, because he went to a dance when he was about just over 2 years old down at this Tommy Edwards place. And at that time, he went to the dance in a dress. And the reason he went in a dress, he had a sister that wasn't too much older than him, and he was wearing out her clothes. And he went to this dance, and he knew there was a lot of people there that he didn't know, and he rudely remembers going home on a sled, and this part of it I'd never heard from anybody else, but according to the time of the year it was sled time, so that's about it.
I understand that he had his parents had more or less adopted another child even after having that many children. You know, that, well, more or less adopted.
Yes, it was a son that was a boy that was a year younger than my dad, but it was actually a relation of his. It was one of his sister's boys, and they had kind of hard times, and so they took Dills Ramsey and raised him as their own and with their Ramsey name. But his mother was at the time, or ended up later on to be the postmistress superior for 34 years.
And Dills is the one that used to run the store at Eden Farson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did Jim serve in the Army?
Yes, he was in the Army and went in the Army in 1916 and came out in 1917 when the war was over.
How old was he at that time?
Let's see. 22 when he went in.
And what did he do while he was there?
Well, he was a horseshoer. They had lots of mules and horses, and very few gas-driven vehicles or any vehicles of any time in the First World War. Used a lot of horses, a lot of mules, old cannons with horses and mules and wagons, and supplied the Army mostly with horses and mules and wagons. And but that's what he was in the Army, was a horseshoer. Because he knew about it to start with before he ever went in, and so it worked real good for the Army and for him also.
Now, did he go overseas?
Yes, he was in France. He went to France. He was in France for 9 months, I think. Might have been 11, but I think it was 9 months that he was in France.
Okay. He had told me about the boat. Could you tell me a little bit about the boat that they went over on?
Well, I guess the boat they went over on, the one that came back, were just about the same. They just, well, at that time, they thought it was a big, big boat. But nowadays, it would be awful small, and they had people stacked one on in hammocks, and slept in hammocks, and in the hold, and just about any place they could sleep, really.
He had also said something about one incident that happened down there. He had said it was about the only time he had seen any kind of action. Could you explain that?
Well, he told me about that. They had the German Army, or the German Air Force, pulled a bombing raid on their horseshoeing facility. And the only thing that they hit was one corner of one building, and I don't think they really meant to hit it because they were trying to bomb some pup tents that were out there. They thought soldiers were sleeping in, but it happened to turn out that all they were was manure piles.
When he came back from France, did he end up getting married at that time?
No, it was just about 6 years later before he got married.
How did him and his future wife meet? Was it just from being together, you know, being so close to neighbors and so on?
Well, they weren't really close neighbors as far as you, they were about 25 miles apart out there. But his wife's dad was an old rancher. He raised cattle and sheep, and my dad had worked for him a little bit before he went to the Army, and he did work for him a couple of years after he came back, helping him out, and he did work for him. So I imagine that's how they really got together.
And who was her dad?
Her dad?
Yeah.
Bill Bates was his name. And he raised a lot of sheep and a lot of cattle and had a fairly good-sized ranch out south of Rock Springs. And he ended up going from here up to above Farson up there on the Sweetwater and had a place up there too. But this was after. And from there on they moved on into Idaho.
So they didn't get married until he didn't get married until he was about 27 years old.
Yeah, he was 26 or 27 years old when he
got married. And how old what was his wife's name?
Barbara Bates.
And how old was she?
Well, let's see, she was born in 1905, and I think they were married in 1924. So she must have been 21, right at 21 years old.
Now, was his parents still running the ranch at this time, or was he running?
Well, he and Betty's brother were running when they come back from when he came back from the Army.
Was his parents deceased?
No. His dad had passed away, but his mother was still alive until 1926, I think.
And did she live still on the ranch? Or?
Yes, she still lived at the ranch.
Okay. And where was their house when they did get married? Was it at the same homestead, or did they?
No, they lived. Well, when they first got married, they lived at the house that Bob Ramsey had had homesteaded at another place, just a little ways below our old upper place. And there's 160 acres there, and so he had built a house there, and that house was built, I think, in 1912. And so they lived in that house for a couple of years. Then when Bob and my dad acquired the old Edwards place, which they bought from McGass, then my dad and mother moved down there. It was a two-room house.
And is that the house that is standing now, or is that?
No, that house has been torn down.
I have the bridal register of Jim and Barbara's, and in it she wrote in here, "Our home is a cozy little gray home in the west of two rooms, very attractively furnished on a cattle ranch in the southwestern part of Wyoming."
And that was the one that was at the old
at the old house. Okay, also in the register she talks about, she wrote down the gifts, and one of the gifts that her parents gave her was a piano, 6 head of cattle, 6 sterling silver knives and forks, 6 sterling silver tablespoons, cut glass, sugar and creamer, gold inlaid vegetable dish. So they probably started their little herd with the 6 cows.
It's about right, and a few had the bee hats.
And then she said in the honeymoon, their honeymoon was spent on the OK Cattle Ranch, north of Rock Springs, Wyoming. Was he working there? Is that why they stayed there?
No, they said north of...
Near Rock Springs, it says.
Near Rock Springs, okay. The OK Cattle Ranch was our cattle ranch.
Oh, okay.
That time that was our brand.
OK was your brand instead of...
OK was the brand instead of what it is now.
When did they change that?
Well, they changed that probably... I think about the time that my dad bought Bob Ramsey out. I think Bob Ramsey kept the OK brand, and that's when my dad got the apron.
Okay. Do you want to kind of describe how they ranched it? You know, how did they do their haying? Was it with a horse and team, or what?
At that time, all the haying was done with horses and by hand and with a pitchfork. When they first did it, just pitched all the hay up on a wagon and hauled it in, and then either pitched it off or used it off with a Jackson fork and lifted it off and stacked it. Then later on, they got the sulky rakes and the bull rakes and the old horse-drawn mowing machines, and they thought they were really going modern. At one time, at the ranch, we had probably 30 head of workhorses, and they were used year-round, summer during the hay, and wintertime pulling sleds and wagons to feed the cattle.
In the haying season, did the neighbors help the neighbors, or did...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the neighbors helped out real good. They about had to, because sometimes you didn't have enough wagons, and sometimes you didn't have enough sulky rakes, and so we traded around, and they also traded labor and horses.
Did they more or less have dances after they were done, or...?
Oh, they used to have dances out in that country all the time. There's a lot of people here in Rock Springs can tell you about a few of them dances that are still alive and have went to them.
Was Jim a rodeo rider? Did he ride, you know, we read of stories about the rodeo and how it became popular. Did he ride a lot at the rodeo?
Yes, he rode quite a bit in the rodeo. He rode just about every place around here. Rock Springs used to be, as it is now, only it's all professional. Rock Springs used to have some of the top rodeos that was around here. Guy Rife, south of Rock Springs, and my dad used to supply the bucking horses. And my dad used to ride in rodeos. He started out, well, way before he went to the Army. In fact, there's a pretty prominent picture of him riding a horse named Casey at 1915 in Pinedale, Wyoming rodeo. And to get there, you went horseback then. There were very few cars, but they rode from here to Pinedale, competed in a rodeo, and then rode back.
Probably took them a couple days.
Oh, yes.
To get there and back.
It took a couple days to get there and a couple days to get back.
Now the one picture the one riding you're talking about is there is a picture that had been taken on that horse. What I understand is he was supposed to have been on the license plate.
Well, they did take a dummy deal of it to see how it turned out, but then the horse was bucking straight toward somebody, bucking straight toward anybody that was looking at the picture. And it kind of looked like he was riding a pig. And so they, instead of using him, they used a ride that was made by Stub Farlow from Thermopolis. And the horse was bucking sideways, and you could see the horse and rider real good.
One thing, going back to after Jim and Barbara were married, were they still going back and forth to town in a horse and buggy and wagons?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. In fact, when I was I think I was about, 8 months old, or, well, I guess I wasn't 8 months old. I was born in September, so sometime during the winter we came to Rock Springs in a wagon, and according to what my mother tells me, I got pneumonia, and they're afraid I wasn't going to make it from that wagon trip.
How long did it take to come from there to town?
They could, if they could hustle right along, they'd make it in one day. But most of the time, it was a one-night layover coming in.
And you guys would camp out?
Yes, especially in the wintertime, it was. Sometimes you weren't too sure whether you could make it in 2 days or not.
Do you remember when you got the first car?
Well, they'd had a couple of old clunkers, but in 1929, my mother paid $1,000 cash for a brand new Chevrolet car from Utzinger Chevrolet in Rock Springs. And at that time, $1,000, they paid cash for it. And it was a good car, but my dad tried to use it for a truck.
Uh-oh.
Everything else. So it went through the hardships, and it didn't last too long.
Okay. Did you guys ever have things like, did you go camp out when you went to get horses and stuff, more like a wagon, kind of like herding, you know, a cow herd and stuff,
well,
did you?
When we used to bring our cows in the falls to ship them, it would take 5 days to bring the cattle from our place to Rock Spring. And at that time, we were shipped out from the UP Railroad here at the stockyards, just above Blairtown. And most of the time, they'd either go to Omaha or Denver. There weren't too many cattle buyers that come around, and there was no place really closer to ship cattle to. Most of the time, if they went to Omaha, they were bought by an outfit by the name of Ryan down there that bought our cattle for years. There was only, I think, 2 years that I can remember that they went to Denver, and the rest of the time they went to Omaha.
Did Jim ever notice anything different during the Depression? The Depression seemed like it hit a lot of the ranchers at that time.
Well, it hit everybody, and it seemed like it hit the ranchers a little harder than most, because there was nothing they could fall back on, and they tried to save everything they could, and tried to get along as cheap as they could to try to get through their trying times. And about the same time as that happened, then the Taylor Grazing Act come in. And that's when they started cutting out cattle. They had too many cattle on the range, they said. At one time we used to have 300 to 325 head of cows. Of course, at that time they were worth about $20 a head, too. And now we can run about 100 head year-round like they were running at that time.
When did Jim and Barbara move to the old homestead?
Well, they moved up there, I think it was 1928. I think I was about a year old when...
And why did they move back there?
Well, because he bought his brother out. And I think that's about when they moved.
Do you know how much he paid for it?
I really can't say exactly. There was partially a kind of a debt that he paid off, and then how much more he paid him, I don't really know.
How many children did Jim and Barbara have?
Just two. Just my sister Wanda and myself.
And Wanda's the older?
Yes, she's 2 years older than I am, and her and her husband own a ranch in Browns Park, Colorado.
he was talking about one time about a race that he had taken. It was more of an endurance race. Do you know about that?
Yes, that race happened in 1947. Let's see, it must have been in late July or early August, because I was in Japan at the time in the Army, and I came home just after it was over. It was a 100-mile race, and it was with one horse. He rode a horse that was called Cowboy that belonged to George Froggatt at the time, that old Sage Creek and the Logan place, which are just below our places. It was a non-stop deal. You stopped if you had to, but if you didn't stop, you were going to do better. He ended up being fourth in that race. He was 52 years old at the time. A boy won first and a girl won second. And the boy was 18, I think, and the girl, I think, was 19. And the guy that won third, I think, was about, 27 years old, I believe.
Do you remember how long it took him to do it?
I can't remember the exact time. I know that my dad won the biggest amount of money that day for guessing the exact time, or guessing the closest time. He came within 4 minutes of guessing how long it would take to do it.
And do you remember where it was at?
There was from Douglas to, Well, I can't really remember now.
Kind of reminds you of that movie, remember the movie, The Bite the Bullet? That kind of reminds you of that.
But this, of course, was about as far as horses could go, and in that Bite the Bullet deal like that, they were supposed to be going plumb across, I don't know how long.
Yeah,
it was something like 506 miles or 510 or something on one horse. But this was done in, far less than 24 hours. I think it was.
That's pretty good for a horse for going less than 24 hours.
Well, it seemed like 16 hours and something strikes me as close to the time of what it took. And you don't run a horse that far all the way in 16 hours.
No. How old was he when you were born?
When I was born?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I was born in 1927. He was 33.
Isn't that kind of unusual, though, for at that time? Didn't they all get married real young?
Well, we didn't. We didn't get married. See, then my sister was 2 years older than I was, and then I imagine it was 2 years before my sister was born, so, but people didn't, there was quite a few people out there that never did get married, guys, too.
I had read some letters that he was working in a different ranch also. Was there a reason? Was it because they needed the money? Was it around Depression time, or?
Yes, that's where he was working for Bill Bates, before they
got married, and then
he
must have worked for him afterwards too.
Oh yeah, he did. He worked for him afterwards too.
Okay. There's another incident where he found a man shot one time. Could you explain that?
Well, there was a fella that come out there, and he found out that the old Gotchi place hadn't paid the taxes on a certain ranch, and hadn't paid them for years and years. And he decided that he was going to take it away from the Gotchi outfit. Well, now, according to what we understand, the Gotchi outfit asked the guy to go ahead and sue yourself and blame it onto the guy that was trying to take this place over. Well, the guy did it. He did it on his horse. Shot himself right through the leg, killed his horse, and at the time, we were the closest neighbors down there. It was the winter time. They sent somebody down there to get us. My dad didn't actually find the guy, but we went up there and took care of him. We went up there on a sled. And I can remember seeing the bullet holes through his leg and my dad cutting the skin away from his leg with a pair of scissors and bandaging him up. And there was at that time, a deputy undersheriff was named Deacon Pitchford. It took 2 days to get him out there to investigate it because it was all had to be done horseback. And they did finally end up making it rough enough for this guy by the name of John Peter to get him to run to leave the country.
And what year was that, do you remember?
Boy, I can't remember. I was probably 4 or 5, I'd imagine. So that'd have been probably 31, 32. I don't know.
Jim and Barbara did buy it, finally did buy a house in town, did they not?
Oh yeah, yes, they bought a house in town, they leased their place out and still owned it, but they never did sell it or anything like that. They leased it out for about 12 years.
He still didn't quit ranching though, do I understand he went to... his daughters for quite a while.
Well, he'd stay out at the ranch and kind of help take care of that, and then he'd go down to Browns Park and kind of help my sister and brother-in-law out down there, too.
There was, he still rode horses and did most of the work. And
yes, he rode horses up until, he rode a horse just 2 weeks before he died.
There was an article in the Green River Star about it. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah, there were two articles in there. The last one that was at the time of his death. And they had been pretty interested in his life before because the former article had been there, it went into the part of it went down into the deal down in Green River at that museum deal. And so they were pretty interested in it when my dad died, because they said one of the last cowboys was in the country finally passed away.
What did he say about the cowboys?
Pardon?
What did he say about the cowboys?
Oh, he said there weren't any cowboys anymore. He said all they were ropers.
And he passed away, he was 86 when he passed away.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was 86 when he passed away.
And he still lived off the ranch?
Yeah. In fact, we went out just 3 days before he died and brought him to town. He was sick when he went out there and brought him in and didn't realize that he was that sick, and he was in the hospital and he passed away in the hospital of a heart attack.
Okay. I'm talking to Diane Ramsey Gaddy, the granddaughter of James C. Ramsey. She's going to give us a little more insight of his life story. One thing maybe we need to get straight right now is you never called him Grandpa Ramsey or Jim or anything. What did you call him?
Well, he was definitely Bunga.
And where did that come from?
As far as I know, that was always his name. But I guess when I was a child, I never could say Grandpa, and Bunga was the only thing I could say, and it stuck. I mean, everyone from the time that I can remember always called him Bunga. His name wasn't Jim.
Now, I had talked to your dad about when his wife-to-be was born, and he wasn't too sure about that incident. I heard he had talked to you about that. You want to elaborate on that?
Well, from the stories that he told me, when he was about 12 years old, the Bates Sheep Ranch had several locations where they were lambing, and with my grandmother being born in May, she was being born in a sheep wagon, and he helped deliver her. He was about 12, as far as I can recall, and with no one else around, he helped deliver her, and eventually they ended up getting married.
You also had mentioned that Jim's dad's family, he had a family before Jim's family had come along.
From the conversations we'd had, his father had originally come from Virginia to homestead in Wyoming with the intention of bringing his family with him. He had a wife and four children back in Virginia and was never able to get them back to Wyoming because of finances, because of the many, many miles that they had to travel. And in those days, divorce was never heard of. No one had ever heard of divorce. So he just started a new family here and ended up marrying another woman, and they had 13 children.
So more or less you're saying he was never divorced, either from his first wife.
No, in the eyes of what the law looks at it right now, he was basically a bigamist.
Did Jim ever date anyone besides Barbara?
A friend of ours, her mother, who is now Arlie Radosevich, told her a story that she was madly in love with Bunga, Jim Ramsey, and the rich, quote unquote, Barbara Bates came along and stole him away from her. Evidently, in those days and times, being a sheep rancher and owning a lot of property meant a lot. And in her day, she was quite up there. She was raised with silver and in the high society, and she more or less swept him off her feet, not realizing that he was the kid that helped her come into this world.
You have I guess you would say, a little bit of writing that Jim had wrote in 1977, his memories. Do you want to read a little bit of that?
Basically what this is some memoirs that he wrote concerning a dance that he went to in 1896. From what I can gather, he was about 2 years old. I'll just read a little bit of it. Tom Edwards' dance. And I can recall sitting on my mother's lap, seeing two strange women doing something at the stove. Then we left and went home, sitting on an old sled, and we could see the light through the window. The old team, one sorrel-striped face called Snipe, the other an old buckskin called Buck. Dad brought Mother and me home about 3 miles and then took the team back for the rest of the litter. And we walked back, as he and Mother would not stay for the rest of the dance. The next morning was real bright and clear, and I can remember standing, I suppose, on a chair, looking out a window, as it was sort of high, not very big, watching them come up through the field, with Tony, who was my cousin, at the time. I couldn't remember seeing all, because it was like a gathering. But what I can recall, hearing the others talk of it, there must have been about 21. The dance was pulled off in a two-room house, just about the size of the kitchen in the home of the ranch, in my bedroom. The music was of an old piano and a violin and an accordion. Frank McKinney, though I didn't get to hear any of the music, was one of the musicians. It didn't start until after we left, and there had been a bunch of noise, and I never would have forgotten it because there were so many people. Not long after this, Dills, my nephew, came into the picture. He was a little over 1 year old, I suppose. Anyway, they sent me into the other room of the house. For believe it or not, the house, three rooms anyway, I came running back to tell him there's another little Jimmy in there. Where he came from, I suppose I could not figure out. Dills and I were together. I'm not quite sure if I can make the rest of this writing out. Looks as though it says, when his mother's living in Idaho and the time took him away until he was 12 years old. From then on, we were together until he got to working out. I had four brothers, but Dills was more to a brother to me, even though he was only my cousin. Dills had a real tough start, but he was done and, well, had nothing given to him. And that's about all that comes out of these memories from 1896. At the time this was written, I believe it was written in 1977.
Well, you also have a letter there that some gentleman wrote him in 1921, I believe?
Yes, it was written in December of 1921. The gentleman was from Nebraska, and he was basically offering a purchase price for his cattle.
How much was that for?
It looks like it was about 6.5 cents a pound.
Which probably comes out to what?
The price was about $63 a head. Right now, in 1988, you can probably get a price of about $500 a head. And in those days, they really thought they were getting a good deal.
There was a story he had told you about something that happened one time when he was plowing with his cousin.
Right, his cousin Steve McGath was helping him plow a field, and Jim was plowing one day, of course, with a team of horses and a plow, and his cousin evidently was grubbing brush, which means pulling brush up out of the field, and he looked around and he couldn't find Sam McGath, his cousin. So he stopped the team of horses and went back to look and see if he couldn't find him. Well, what he'd done is plowed him under, and he was plowed into the field. When he found out Sam was okay, he told him maybe he should have just left him there.
There was a couple incidents he had talked about. You were telling me about when him and Barbara decided to get married. What was one of the incidents that happened at that time?
One night when we were at the ranch and we were all sitting around the fire and talking about modern day times and kids drinking and how concerned we were about pregnancies, and after Grandma had a couple glasses of wine, she got to telling us about her childhood and when she was a teenager and things that went on. And she happened to mention that they were at a dance one night, she and Ann Bunga, my granddad, and they had all been partying and having a good time. And evidently what happened is they got caught in the bar and alone. And that really wasn't too acceptable that night. And she wasn't too excited about telling us that, but I don't think that to this day and age it would be too big of a deal.
How old was she? Do you recall when she was married?
I believe she was probably 16 or 17 when they were married.
And how old was Bunga?
I believe he told us he was 26 or 27. He'd already served in the Army. He was quite a bit older than she was. I don't think he was much younger than that.
There was an incident they had talked to you about one time about feeding cows. This was after they were married and they were feeding cows with a sled? Or?
Yeah, they'd already had both children, Jim, who's my dad, and Wanda, who's my aunt. And they used to have to feed in the wintertime on a sled. Well, of course, winters in Wyoming are very bad most of the time, and she used to have to help him feed. It was probably about 40 below one winter, and she was out helping him, and her face was frozen. Of course, they had no way to get to town, and the only way she had to treat it was to pack snow on her face, and her skin turned black for about a month. It never really left any scars because she packed the snow on her face, but she definitely had black skin on her face.
There's one incident that I thought was a little comical. It concerned one of their hired hands. Would you like to talk about that?
They got into a predicament where they needed to hire some help, and they had a man by the name of Peeler that they hired. He was kind of a cocky gentleman, as we would see it nowadays. And he and my grandmother had a disagreement, and he happened to slap her. Well, she pulled out a .22, and when he saw the gun, he took off running. We dove out a window, and she shot him. The only problem is, the only place she hit him was in the heel of his boot. Well, my grandmother was quite upset, and when she told my granddad about it, she expected a little bit of defense or a little being backed up a little bit. Well, when he fired him, my granddad walked into the road and shook his hand. He's very lucky my grandmother didn't shoot him. She was very upset. You know, it's kind of amazing because she shot a man and didn't think anything of it. But several years later, she's got a big quaking asp tree out in the front yard, and she had a little red-headed woodpecker pecking at the bugs on the aspen tree. Well, she got out her same .22 pistol, and she shot the woodpecker, and she cried for 3 days. So it goes to show where your heart is.
You had said something about the way Bunga was with animals. Do you have certain incidents about that?
Well, you know, he would always talk to the animals. He'd call the cows, and the cows would come like dogs or cats, and they'd follow him around, and the animals just loved him. And he loved them. I mean, he just had a way with animals. And the same way with horses. We had big workhorses that could run over anybody and never think anything of it, and it wouldn't bother them. Well, he was shoeing a horse one time in the barn, and in order to shoe a horse, you have to bend over, hold the horse's foot up, and he has to shift his weight on the other 3 feet. Well, this horse just would not shift his weight. He kept leaning and kept leaning and kept leaning, and Bunga talked to him, and he wouldn't move. And so finally he got fed up, and he took the rasp, which is like a great big huge metal fingernail file, and hit the horse between the eyes, and it knocked him cold. Took the horse about 10 minutes to come to. Well, when he finally did come to, he got the horse shooed in about an hour, which normally would be a 3-hour job, because that horse was just scared to death of him. And it wasn't because he was mean to the animal, but the animal really did respect him.
How old was he when he was doing this?
I I believe he was in his late 70s, early 80s. He was always very active. He was never the kind to just sit around the house and, okay, and take care of me, because he wasn't that kind. He always cooked for himself. He always took care of the animals himself. He wasn't the kind for you to feel sorry for him, because that's the last thing he ever wanted.
I heard that doing that, shoeing horses, is a lot of work. I mean, it's physical besides anything else.
Oh, it's back-breaking, and, you know, he was very bow-legged. And a lot of people thought, well, maybe he had a disease. Well, that wasn't the case at all. He rode his whole life. He was born and raised on a horse. And I mean, some people could say he died on a horse. He rode like 2 weeks before he died. Shoeing horses, you're bent over backwards. The animal's weight is basically on your leg while you're shoeing them, and it's really a lot of physical labor.
One of their favorite, would be the favorite pastimes they like to do was rent horses. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, we had several herds of horses out there. Tame, saddle-broke horses, branded horses, purebred horses mixed in with wild horses. And, of course, in order to find out what was yours and what wasn't, you'd have to run them in. Well, running wild horses nowadays is against the law. The BLM protects the wild horses. But back then, they'd bring in the different herds of horses. I can recall maybe 6 or 7 different herds with maybe 20 or 30 horses per herd. It would take anywhere from 12 to 14 hours a day to bring in a bunch of wild horses. They'd bring them into the corral, sort out the old ones. The old ones would be shipped for dog food. The younger ones would be sold to rodeo strings for bucking horses, which we've had several of the horses that came from out there that made the national finals rodeos with the Acorn brand on them that came from the Ramsey Ranch. The young mares, the good studs, the colts, they'd all be left to breed and multiply. And actually, the control was better than what the federal government is trying to do. It wasn't anything inhumane. If the horses were, you know, had no teeth, if they were sway back, if they were in bad shape, they'd be shipped for dog food. The younger ones would be shipped to rodeo strings, and they'd all be taken care of. They were fed, they were taken care of. And the young, healthy ones were all turned back out. It wasn't like they were being mistreated at all. I kind of feel like the federal government is taking something into their hands that they really can't quite control right now. You know, right now it's illegal to even mess with a government-protected animal or something that's wild. It's even illegal to move a wild horse. Back in those days, they didn't have a problem with the horses taking over the range rights and taking up all the grain, you know, the grazing lands. They were more or less controlled by the ranchers.
How old was Bungo when the last time he had ran horses?
I believe he was probably in his early 70s. And the last horse running I can remember, he was on a horse probably for about 14 hours that day, which meant dead hard running, because when these animals are wild, they're not something that you can slow down and say, hey, wait a minute, I want to stop and have a cup of coffee or a cigarette. And when they start taking off, if you're not ahead of them and you're not moving them, you know, you lose them. And of course, they didn't want to lose them because they had their own animals mixed in with them and they wanted to cut them out. He just stuck with it.
There was one incident I remember one time someone recalling to me about him. Is he was around, he was
about that same age when he went to his last Browns Park dance. Do you remember that?
Browns Park dances were something that everybody looked forward to in the summertime. All the ranchers from Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, they'd all get together, have a big dance. They'd have a box lunch, which would mean the women would bring lunches. They'd set them out on a table, and the men would draw names, and whomever they got to go eat lunch with them. The last dance I remember him going to, there was a band with a lady playing a pitchfork, and he thought that was so much fun. He danced and danced and danced all night, and I can remember it being about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning before we could finally slow him down to getting home, and he was definitely in his late 70s.
Speaking about eating, what is he famous for?
Well, he definitely loved to eat. He'd rather eat somebody else's cooking, but he wasn't afraid of his own. He used to make what he called dough gods, and they were made out of sourdough, and he'd deep fry them. Of course, you couldn't get into the kitchen while he was cooking them because it was so full of smoke. But one morning, I can remember being out there, and he sat down for breakfast at probably about 7 o'clock in the morning after he got through cooking, and he ate 27 dough gods, which were about the size of a regular scone. And it took him about 2 hours to eat, and the whole time he was eating, he didn't say a word. He just sat and enjoyed his food. I mean, that's one thing he just loved, is he loved cooking. He loved food.
What is some of the different things that they ate?
Well, he would, you know, a lot of people would frown at Rocky Mountain oysters, which is something, you know, when you get to branding and you're cutting calves, I mean, he just loved them. Boiled tongue, pickled tongue, heart, tripe, which is a cow's stomach. I mean, they ate everything. I mean, people frown at liver, but, I mean, they would... There wasn't anything that was wasted in the animal.
You said something about he used to be a harmonica player.
Well, you know, we all used to sit around in awe at my grandmother playing the piano. She did have polio when she was a child, and about the only thing she had to do was to play the piano. And we'd sit and listen and sing along and have a good time. Well, one night he says, well, this is enough of this crap. I can do something too. So he pulled out his harmonica and played all night long. He'd never had a lesson in his life. It was basically done by ear. He wasn't doing it to show off. He basically did it because he knew we were all having a good time.
You had talked about one incident. It was years later when he was a lot older. It was about almost the year that he had passed away when everyone was repairing a roof. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, of course, the house at the ranch was pretty close to 100 years old, and there's always maintenance and things that need to be done. Well, a bunch of us were at the ranch, and the guys decided, geez, maybe we better fix this roof on this house because it's leaking like hell. So there was about five of them, and they got up on the roof, and they tar papered, and they poured tar, and I mean, they hammered nails, and it took them the whole day. Well, they all got down off the roof, and they stood back and says, well, Bunga, what do you think? And he looked up at it, and he says, well, guys, I just think it looks like hell.
You had talked about all the horses and stuff like that, and after a while, you were saying that his legs kind of gave out because they were bowed. How did the animals react to that?
Well, not only did he have the bowed legs, but he ended up having cataracts and had surgery, and he couldn't see very well. But for some reason, the animals, the horses especially, could sense that. He had an old mare that just would take care of him, and at that time she really wasn't all that old. In fact, she just passed away a year ago, and he's been dead 8 years. So she would, when he knew that he was ready to get on her, she'd look for a rock so that he'd get a way to get up.
I'd like to thank you and your dad for taking the time to talk to me about Jim.